is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The shutdown. The conversation in Washington is how long and why. I welcome Veronique Durigy of the Mercatus Center, writing most recently about the ambitions, what I understand, of the Democratic Party to restore or augment or expand health care opportunities for people in need. I'm putting it generally because the language here is loaded. However, Veronique, a very good evening to you. As I understand your most recent column at Creators Syndicate, the ambition of the Democratic Party is to spend more, but that will not result in a positive outcome necessarily. But spending more is Washington's version of compassion. Why won't it work, or why is it likely not to work? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, I mean, it won't work because we're already enormously in debt. And there's a moment where debt is going to create a drag on our growth that's big enough that everyone is paying. So while, you know, from a political point of view, you can say that you're winning some points by spending money on some interest groups, you know, on net, it's not paying off because we're all paying. We're the unseen victim of this country's politicians' fiscal irresponsibility.
The best example I've had recently is a conversation with a colleague of yours, Adam Michel at Cato, an argument about why reducing taxes and deregulating the government and spending less by the Congress results in good outcomes for health and wealth. The example Mr. Michel gave me was when the Clinton administration talked about a pathway for people to leave the welfare society, to shrink welfare. Mm-hmm. That led to people not taking a check and living on transfer payments, but getting jobs. That was the 20th century. Is that still understood here in the 21st century, that giving more money away doesn't lead people to better lives?
So what Adam was talking about, and Adam is fabulous, is was the welfare reform of 96 that effectively put a lot of constraints on getting welfare, including work requirements. And it did reduce poverty, child poverty, and moved more people into the workforce as we could have expected. And it's been just really kind of amazing to see how effective it has been to reduce child poverty and to reduce dependence on welfare and to reduce poverty overall. And It was understood for about 20 years, but we're losing that understanding. And Democrats, for instance, now have actually closed the government just because they want, you know, bigger extension on a lot more tax credits that create an enormous burden on government. But they also want all sorts of things. If they had it their way, we would be giving, we would be sending checks to people all the time, creating disincentive to work. So I'd say, and unfortunately, there are some Republicans who are falling for this idea that we should be doing things like this. So I would say that the lessons of the 90s have been lost. There are few people who remember it because politically, it's actually easier to tell people we're going to give you checks than to say, you know what, we're just going to actually take all this welfare away. And believe us, after a while, you'll adjust and your life will be on net much better. They don't want to do that.
Let's stay with the spending, because I've been learning from you that spending is the problem. There, right there. That's it. And the way I learned it from Adam to say to you, to see if I got the logic right, not cutting spending is a tax hike. Do I say that correctly?
Yes. You say that exactly correctly. We have enormous deficits right now. And we have deficits because politicians have decided to increase spending and increase spending and increase spending. They've also decided to cut taxes, which often has good results when it's done in the proper way by reducing marginal tax rates or by doing what the administration did, which is to do full expensing, allowing company to deduct their capital cost. There are ways in which actually cutting spending can really create growth, important growth. But there are also tax cuts like tax credit and things like this that are just not so pro-growth. And the problem with these, and often politicians love these, is that they increase the deficit. So you increase the deficit, you increase the deficit, you increase the deficit. And there is a moment where basically future generations are going to face a choice. Like, if we don't cut spending to actually reduce the deficit, future politicians are going to actually increase taxes on them. And that's not a good thing. First, it's unfair, right? And so we really shouldn't do it. We this is why we always say, you know, deficits today, because either you cut taxes without cutting spending too, or you just increase spending and increase spending and increase spending, or refuse to cut spending, means future taxes. And that's going to be shouldered by future generations.
If I understand correctly, there are many Republicans, more than enough to make a majority, who believe that cutting taxes is a good thing, but they were ready to spend money as well. That spending money part, do they not understand that they're not only undoing their tax cuts, but they're burdening the future? Do they understand that?
I don't know if they understand it, but they don't have the political courage to do things differently. But there's also the fact that when you cut taxes, not all taxes are pro-growth. And when you cut taxes without offsetting the loss of revenue with spending cuts, you're making the deficit problem worse.
Right.
And because, of course, we don't want to fix the deficit by raising taxes. For one part, it's anti-growth. But the other thing is, like, we know from the literature that the only way to successfully reduce the debt to GDP ratio is by implementing fiscal adjustments that are based on spending cuts, right? They need – that's – We know all of this, so I don't know if they know this. One of the things that I know is, like, they don't have the political courage for sure to do it.
Thomas Piketty, famous economist in France, has a new book, and we've been discussing it for the last few weeks. Equality is a struggle. I learned from Mr. Piketty that he blames economists such as yourself for deregulation and liberalization.
No, I mean, Thomas Piketty. I mean, he's right to say in this column that I read that economists played a key role in the liberalization and deregulation wave of recent decades. But contrary to his intent, that's something to celebrate, not to condemn. I mean, the opening of markets, privatization and freer trade, right, helped lift billions of people out of poverty. It helped fuel innovation and gave consumer greater choice and prosperity. But maybe the reason why Piketty is saying all of this is because he lives in France,
right,
and may not fully appreciate how the dynamism unleashed by these reforms. I mean, France is done, you know, some of it, and this is why it's probably better off than it would have been. But France has really not been adopting these type of measures, and Piketty is really not. I mean, I guess when you see what's happening today, and when you see that France is actually living in a world that Piketty, you know, that, I mean, it's a good reflection of what Piketty wants. When you see their problem, their fiscal problem, and their lack of growth, you may wonder whether his claim are going to age well.
Veronique Durazier, Mercatus Center. I'm John Batchelor.